I've been doing anything from government to manufacturing to pharmaceutical, finance. You name it, I probably worked in that industry. And I can tell you that from doing all that, that they are... I'm skipping around. That they're all not as unique as we think, right? So across all these, you have same common hardware, same common issues, same common problems, right? And they're all trying to do kind of the same thing, maybe in different ways, or maybe with different platforms of hardware. And I think that's where kind of Azure will bring all that together, and kind of make everyone's life a little bit easier. I also love puzzles, right? So like everyone in this room, I love building puzzles. I love putting them together. I love finishing it and figuring out how to put it together. But at the end of the day, I don't want to do that puzzle over again. And I don't think anyone here really, after you put it together, want to tear it apart and put it right back together again. So I think that's where Azure comes into play. You build your RAID controller once, you set up the storage once, you set up the VMs once. You don't want to keep doing that. You want to move on to bigger and better. You want to refocus your time on applications, doing DR, making HA, or just other business processes that you could do that you could elaborate on better. So with Azure, we're going to go over management, storage, and VM families. Some of the main things with the management takeaway is you have limits. So right out of the box, working with some of the companies we have, you have upfront soft limits. So these are to protect you more than anything. Let's say take CPUs for example. So you start out and you're allowed 20 CPUs. With those 20 CPUs, you can call up Microsoft though, and you can say, hey, we need more than this. But they're putting that limit on you. More from a cost, right? You don't want to show up one day and have a bill for 20 grand that you weren't expecting to have because your developer guys were out there setting up a bunch of VMs to just to test on. So it's more tech you guys. Again, almost all these are soft limits. You can call them up, get more. Just take note. Remember that you can call them up and ask for extension on almost everything. Large deployment guides. So From building some of the larger environments, we did a insurance company that was straight in Azure, and to spin up a whole bunch of VMs, we scripted out a lot of code for them. During that process, we were doing a lot of gits, so we were doing a lot of git commands. We were saying, hey, is the server build? What's the networking on this? And we found out that if we script this stuff out and we try to do large gits against the entire environment, that we started getting denials. We started getting just straight 503 errors where they're coming back and they're saying, hey, you can't do anymore. So instead of turning off, we left it on for a little bit longer, thinking, hey, this ain't right, our code's good, what's going on? So we got a little bit farther, we started seeing a timer on this. So we also noticed that the longer we left it on or the more we hit it, the longer the timer went. So we actually had to call up Microsoft again, tell them, hey, this is what we were doing. And they took the timer off it for us so we could keep going on. But I think the things to take away from this is make sure that when you're setting stuff up that you do your code cleanly and that you don't try to do complete global commands every single time. Resource groups, these are a little bit newer. It's a great way to say, hey, I have a SQL team. I want to give them the ability to set up more storage, set up the networking for them, add more VMs, add more servers, but I don't want them to go over and touch the file servers, right? I don't want them to be able to hop on there, get the console, and then start plugging away at it. I don't want them to get access to the VHDs. It's a way to separate out your organization. So let's take a large manufacturing company that we work at. They have a whole bunch of servers, right? So they have... things that track where the machines are through GPS, they have things that track where their employees are, they have file servers, you know, domain controllers and all those other things. And they wanna give their company the ability to access all that, but they don't wanna give them all the access it across the board. So resource groups are a great way to do that. Again, billing is another way. So you can have resource groups for your dev teams, your test teams, and your production teams. Use them, they're great, especially when you get larger, you're gonna want to start looking at these a lot more. VM families. So these are your basic tiers of how you can build your VMs. So whether you have a small file server or whether you have a very large SQL database or Oracle database or anything else that you can throw up in the cloud, they give you a tier that you can put that in. I think some of the key concepts to take away from the tiers are that you need to make sure that you plan your tier accordingly for what you think that your server can be. So like, let's say you start out with an A family and you're saying, well, it's just a test and I think that's fine. We can use an A basic. So A gets broken out into two different pieces, basic and standard. So basic would be, I just want to test. I don't care how fast I get it. And I don't care if I'm sharing a CPU with another VM. So your basic will give you the ability to do that. Just note that if you're on a basic, you can't just pick it up and move it over to a standard. So an A standard would give you the ability to say, I want to have dedicated CPU, I want dedicated memory, and I want to be able to grow a little bit larger than what a normal tester dev would do. A also gives you some limits on CPU, also gives you some limits on hard drive and IOPS. So again, this is going to be your kind of your standard tier. So domain controllers, file servers, web servers, normal light load, average infrastructure type servers. Then you go up to your D class. So D is broken out into, you have a couple different options here, right? So you have your original D series that goes, that one would be higher CPU, higher memory, higher storage than an A series. But they replaced those recently with V2s. So where before, if you have a D series, you can switch those over to your DS and you're going to be just fine. They're actually cheaper now than a normal D series. They're also better CPUs. So you get E5 series CPUs with those. Next, a little higher up with those D series are going to be DS series. So these are the ones that start giving you premium storage, which we'll go into a little bit later on. They'll give you the ability to have a little more IOPS on your drives. They'll also give you the ability to have more memory and CPU. Your temporary drive also gets larger on these. Your N series are going to be, this is a newer series out, so I'm not going to cover this very much. It's meant for GPU process, like high video processing, I guess you could do a lot of things on with a GPU, right? You could do Bitcoining on there if you wanted to, right? Or any other type of research you might do that would need a lot of GPU. You go from there. Let's say you have a really high SQL database server that's doing a lot of IOPS. You need a ton of CPU, you need a ton of memory. You go up here G level. So I think the thing to take away from a lot of this, though, is let's say I plan it out, I do the research on this, I find out that like a D series, like a D1 is probably going to fit my bill. Take that, and I highly recommend you go up two notches, because you're going to find out later on that as soon as you start getting load on there, it's going to be more than what you thought, and then you're going to want to bump it up. So now let's say that you go up into higher class, and let's say you're on a D4, and you said, okay, my D4 is great, I actually only needed a D1 or a D2, I go up, and now I need to bump up in our next group, so I need to jump up to a DS series. So I'd have to take my server, I'd have to power it down, I'd have to build a new template, I'd have to build a new VM based off my original hard drives. Reconfigure it, re-IP it, get it back up and running. So again, kind of with the overall thing, you just want to make sure that you go off of the CPU memory disk, and you know, with the more you want, the more it's going to cost. And again, like, so back on the A0s there, they go anywhere from like $65 a month all the way up to about $10,000 a month. And you might say, well, $10,000 a month, man, that's a lot of money. That's you know, I can buy a lot of horsepower for that. We did the math one time, and I think one of the top tier servers with what you get up here is about $60,000. And you're like, well, gee, I can still buy two of those servers for the same one I just bought in Azure. But wait, there's more. You don't just buy the server, right? You have to buy the backup server that would go with it. You'd have to buy the storage that would go with it. You'd have to purchase your networking switch. You'd have to pay for the support on all that stuff. You'd have to pay for everything else that comes along with support and all that hardware, right? The cooling, the space, the storage. So it adds up real quick, and it starts to become kind of appealing to a lot of companies that might not have that to begin with. Maybe they really don't have the extra room, or maybe they don't have the maintenance crew that can set up the extra servers for them, or yeah, they're going to run out of stuff. So that's where these servers start coming into play. Again, the gotchas. Each cloud service, each affinity group can only be in one scale unit. You can't swap between them. When you do want to start switching between scale units, sometimes it's going to, let's say you start in a smaller scale unit. You start on an A series. And you realize, hey, the hard drive on here isn't ever going to be fast enough. I'm never going to get enough IOPS for my system. So now I need to move that. So what do you think? I'm gonna take the server, I'm gonna power it down, I'm gonna delete the VM, I'm gonna keep my current VHDs, and I'm gonna build a new server. So now you get extra CPU, you get extra memory, but your disk is still sitting there in the original containers that was the standard container. Now what's the problem there? Well, now I have to take a server that might have been terabytes, download it back to on-prem, or somewhere else I can download it to, and then re-upload it to another container. Well, that might not be a problem for some companies. Other companies might have an issue where maybe a couple hours of outage might be a huge impact for them. So plan accordingly, plan ahead. Plan for growth, because we were at a client, they asked for a certain size server. We gave it to them, and then literally a month later they said, hey, I want to bump up. And not only did they want to bump up, but they wanted to bump up in both their locations. Well, when we planned it in an east and west data center. And what they wanted to bump the server up to was available on the east coast, but not the west coast, right? So now they have an even larger problem. So now they have to do a migration. So keep that in mind. Storage has gotten interesting in the past few months. So you get premium storage now with all your DS series. The premium storage gives you a ton of extra abilities. We'll go on that next slide. So when you first build a VM, kind of one of the most important things that you want to plan out is your storage, because that's the one thing that you can't move, takes the longest to move. And it also depends on compliance too, right? So playing that back, the local redundant storage, that one's all local. It doesn't leave your data center. You get three copies of that container at the local place. Where this might become important is if you don't need to span that across locations, you get this a little bit cheaper. And another thing to keep in mind is that you can only use this one when you're actually using your premium storage. So right now you can't take premium storage and span that across data centers. So where is that a problem? If you want to use the GS series and you need a lot of horsepower, that box is going to be local. So you want to plan on having two of these boxes in different data centers, replicate your data if you're really worried about DR. Zone redundant storage. This one's a little bit newer. It's actually really beneficial to a lot of companies that might have compliance where they need their data replicated across different geolocations and not necessarily in the same data center. So while the storage here, regardless of whether it has multiple copies in the same data center, is still protected by RAID in the storage system. So you gotta think, even though it's I only have one copy in this data center, it's still on a RAID system, right? So the chances of you losing data because of hard drive loss isn't the best. So again, if you have just a compliance that says, hey, I need to replicate my stuff across different sites, this one's the cheapest, and you get your copies. GRS. So GRS will give you 3 copies in your current data center that you're live in, and also 3 in another data center. So if you have a requirement that you make sure your data stays around forever and it never goes away, this is probably going to be your best bet. It's the price range really isn't that bad as you might think. It's a difference, but it's not a fortune, right? I'd usually recommend this one for a lot of companies, just because you know you get your current outage in your data center, you can pick it up and move it into another data center. Some people might ask me, hey, can I access that data in the other data center? The answer is no for that. Microsoft actually controls when it's going to fail over data centers. So just keep that in mind. So you can't be like, I'm going to test the failover. It won't be there. You'll have to, I mean, you might be a little bit of a ticket with Microsoft and have them fail it over, but out of the box, it's not there. The RAGRS, that one might be really interesting if, say, you're thinking about doing a report server somewhere else. So let's say you got 2 SQL servers, you want to replicate your databases, and you want to do reporting in a different location. You can access your data and actually read from it. Premium storage. So before, you always got a D drive. Your D drive is a temporary drive, right? So that drive is often unused. A lot of people, if you're not using SQL, it's just sitting there and it's wasted space. So with premium storage, it'll take that drive and actually use some of it for write caching, right? And that's only going to be on your DS servers. But premium storage also gives you the ability to have more IOPS, right? So you can have up to 80,000 IOPS per box, and that would be on the highest tier, right? Lower tiers have lower capped IOPS. Lower disk also has lower capped IOPS too. So if you want to get your full 5,000 IOPS per disk, you need to be using a terabyte disk. Your average write speed, I'm going to say, is 5 milliseconds with no cache. I've seen it higher. I've seen it lower. It really depends on the day, and it depends on your base tier level that you go off of. When you turn on your cache, initially there was only read. Now there's read and write cache. So they say, again, you can get less than 1 millisecond. Again, I've seen it. I've seen it as low as 1 millisecond. It averages roughly around there. I mean, that one's pretty good. How many storage accounts? So you can have up to 40 PhDs per container. Do I recommend it? No. Do you pay for storage you don't use? No. So why not? Why not take your containers and have a lot of them, right? Why not use the maximum number of disks you can have per server? Again, because you're not paying for stuff you're not using, right? So if my server, like an A4, let's take for example, let's say it has a maximum of 4 drives at 500 IOPS a drive, you might as well use all 4 of those drives, right? Put all 4 of those drives in that box, rate across those, and then now you double, triple, quadruple your speed, right? And again, you get your performance without paying for it, essentially. You pay for how much storage you use. And the storage you use is actually based on that data compressed, right? So you're not actually paying for your raw data. Back to the containers can do 20,000 IOPS per container, right? The new premium ones. Your older containers, I think actually all the containers would do 20,000 IOPS. So you just gotta keep that in mind. The older drives will only do 500 IOPS per drive. The newer ones will do 5,000. So do the math, right? If I have a server, I want to get 20,000 IOPS. I need 4 drives. I need 1 container, and I can't put more in there. I could put more in there, right? But that container's max has got to be my 20K. So I think takeaways in the storage accounts is 20,000 IOPS per storage account. 40 VHDs per container. Temporary drive guidance, sure. So we were at a client and they were setting up SQL. They had all of their SQL databases on the D drive. And they're like, well, the D drive is the SSD drive. I'm like, yes, it is. but that drive will go away as soon as you reboot that box. So just keep in mind that your D drive is a temporary drive and use it as such. So if you're using SQL, put your tempdbs on there. If you're using anything that can utilize a temporary drive, throw it on there, right? If you're worried about your page files in your C drive, put that on your D drive, right? Anything that can be recreated post-reboot. So if you can do a scheduled task, you know, set that up, test that, make sure you test that. This is a really handy tool. So if you're thinking that your server is not getting the performance you need, this tool will actually tell you how fast your current drives are going. Why is this so cool too? You can also use it on your box. You don't have to worry, you're not limited to only using it in Azure, right? It'll work on your local hard drive. And what's kind of cool is if you know, you're using a normal 1700 RPM drive, you can actually see that you're getting about 100 IOPS per drive. If you're using a solid state, it goes way up. And it's actually really impressive to use. Super simple to set up, really handy. If you haven't used it, really handy. I'm just going to do a quick demo going over the differences between a D series, a D2, and a DS2. The difference there, again, is the DS2, you'll get the premium storage. And I set these all up using four hard drives, so we'll just go over that. The first thing I'm going to do is create storage counts. So some things to notice with storage counts, if you set them up ahead of time and you're creating a VM from a template, you can put the entire drive now on premium storage. So before, if you use a template out of the box and you use a default container, it may put your OS in a standard container. So you might only get 500 IOPS for your OS. As most of us do, and most of us configure it, you configure your stuff in a different drive anyway. So usually it's not a big deal. But if you have some legacy app or something that requires it, like a Borland database that someone configured on your C drive that you can't touch, set your containers up ahead of time, choose those containers when you're building your VMs, and you're good to go. So right here, again, I'm choosing premium storage, and again, you can notice that you only get LRS. So again, if you have requirements for redundancy, failover, you definitely want to set up another server somewhere for it. Also note that locations, they don't have these available in all the locations, so not all locations have your DS, not all locations will have your GS servers. So again, plan that accordingly too. So if you're planning on having servers and you want to upgrade them later on, make sure you pick a location that has the capability of growing with you. Again, we're gonna choose some resource groups when we're building these out. Note that all this can be done through PowerShell. The main reason I'm using an MSDN account that probably wasn't mine for this demo here, but all this can be scripted out. So there is JSON scripts out there on all the Microsoft websites. There's really good forums out there for templates that are already pre-made. And a lot of this can be pre-configured for you. So even when I'm going through and rating out stuff, all this can be pre-configured ahead of time. So I choose a West location for these, and this West location actually has all your drives for you. But as you're going through these, you'll notice that different versions will have different max IOPS. So keep that aware, do the math ahead of time, and just go back to your vendor and be like, hey, what are the IOPS we're expecting to use in this? What are the requirements? So I was working before in a medical company, and they were using ERM system that required really low latency. So they wanted under 5 milliseconds, and they had like a crazy IOP of like 30,000 or 40,000 IOPS, right? So put that into perspective, 30,000 or 40,000 IOPS. I mean, every 7,200 RPM drive gets you about 100 IOPS, right? 75 to about 100 IOPS. So, I mean, do the math. It's a ton of spindles, right? Even if you double that up, it's still a ton of spindles. And as that application grows, your drives are going to grow, and then you're just going to have to put more. Azure just keeps making more sense when you start looking at this stuff. The ability to grow on the fly is absolutely amazing, right? Also note that the memory in these boxes too, when we're building them, the caps kind of hit you really quick, especially when you're doing things like SQL again. Any other database system that might be a hog, I don't know if you have some sort of requirement to do Exchange on-prem and you end up moving it up to the cloud because you have some plugin that you can't use in O365, right? Keep aware of your tiers that you're using for those servers when you throw them up in Azure. The monitor is actually really handy. Keep that enabled by default. Going into the servers later on, I just had a guy ping me the other day, and he goes, the box is slowing down in the middle of the day. I don't know what's going on. We think it's Azure. And I'm like, hold on, let's go start digging into this a little bit. So we went back to those dialog logs. We started looking up there, and we started figuring out that, hey, your box is chewing up all the memory. Not only is it chewing up all the memory, but your CPU is spiking around the same time that your senior slow down. And it's not actually Azure, right? So it can help you troubleshoot, and it's super handy. Some of the other things, if you create your containers ahead of time, you can put your OS on the D drive. Again, if you want to save money, create a standard storage account and throw your OS in there. Do you save a lot? No. Do you save some? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you guys are watching the numbers, it's definitely worth it. Again, note that we're using the terabyte drives. If you use slower drives, as you can see right here, it shows you your max IOPS. So smaller drives get you less IOPS. Just keep that aware when you're picking the size. Again, why not pick the largest, right? It doesn't matter if you don't use it. If you're concerned about caps and you say, well, I want to use a smaller one because I want to make sure that we don't use more data than we should, maybe that's a reason why you choose smaller. But I'd recommend that you just choose the largest ones you can and the most that you can. Get the performance out of the box that you're paying for. If you're going through the GUI to create your drives, actually, some things to note also, you can't do them that quick. And as you'll see, I'll get some errors here later on. You have to at least wait until they populate down here. If you don't, you're going to get an error. This is one of those commands that you can only allow to issue one at a time. So even when you're building out hard drives through a script, you're going to want to make sure that you check to make sure that your old script's done before you try to issue the next command, or you're going to get an error message. The throughput in speed is also different. It's a lot different on premium. So if you're doing a lot of large file transfers, rather than a lot of IOPS, the premium might actually be appealing to you too, not just for quick queries, but for large file dumps. So again, large transfer files, videos, anything else like that. So the end goal here is we're gonna do an IO meter on these servers and show you the actual performance difference. I can tell you when I first started doing Azure and we first started setting people up, like this stuff wasn't out there all the way. And then we went to another Microsoft conference and they actually we found out that you know you can span your drives. And it's actually recommended that you span your drives. And a lot of people were like, well, I got to change that to dynamic, and not only do I have to change to dynamic drives, but now I have to worry about having multiple drives. So the chances of failure are higher. But you also have to realize that the underlying architecture is still fault tolerant for you guys. Again, when you're building these out, make sure that you choose different storage accounts if you're going to be doing premium storage, and you're going to have more than four drives in a box. It's key because we had a client and they were going to complain about slowness. We go out there and they wanted to keep things organized, right? So they've used the same storage account for everything, and they use the standard storage account for everything. So that's where they were running their contention at. So we had to have them break out their storage accounts, move the VHDs around, and they were fine. And luckily they were in a position where they were okay to have outage, at night. But you know, if you're following the sun type company, you can run into issues. So during this part, we're just gonna use normal RAID. We're gonna span these drives, just get them up and running and make sure they're there. Now, when I was doing the demo, I didn't give these servers time to stay on for a while, so the cache performance probably isn't gonna be the best when you're seeing these, but they are gonna be close. Now, the tool is also very handy when you're done. If you are running into issues, you get onto that box, you run your IOP tool, and you realize that, hey, I have the drives, I am striping, I'm not getting the speed, that's the perfect time to call up Microsoft and be like, here's the report from the tool that you guys provided, here's the results, and here's what's happening. And maybe they can even make a recommendation saying, hey, you guys, if you didn't configure something right, you use a cache, right? Your application isn't an application that can utilize caching like it should. You're doing a whole lot of random IOPS. It's extremely handy to have. It's actually just cool to play with on your own box too. Same with the IOPS, there's also another tool for the CPU. They don't necessarily rate the CPU like they do normal laptops. They don't rate it as in this one gets 2 gigahertz. They rate it more in a number-based form. So there's another tool out there that'll tell you what you're getting. And then you can also go back and check the tier that you're using to make sure that you're getting the speed that you should. So I did a base test on here of just 512. Now this is a standard, right? And I have 4 drives, and I am spanning them. And I'm only getting about 250 IOPS. So on this box is supposed to be able to get about 2,000 IOPS. So the only thing I can think on this box is I didn't leave it up for long enough, right? So at this point, I would've called Microsoft. I've been like, hey, this box is on. I do have recaching on. I did spam my drives. I don't know what's going on. And they would've probably told me, hey, you didn't leave your box on long enough. It had no time to fill your cache up for you. Or they might have said, hey, your box is having an issue. Here's why. Here's how to fix it. Now in this DS box is interesting because it's only supposed to get about 6,000 IOPS. And again, like I was saying earlier, some days are better, some hours are better, but you can see it's getting about 8,000 IOPS. So it's actually getting more than the box it should. So these type of tests are great when you're having issues. Again, if you want to see how your actual performance is, or if you want to make sure that you're getting what you're supposed to. And again, 2,000 over what we're supposed to. So the DS series are absolutely phenomenal servers. Absolutely phenomenal. So some resources. If you guys want to jot this down, it's good to take home with you, or just follow up later. Channel 9 has a lot of good videos on there for how-tos. Anything you might have on there is probably going to be on there. I know Ignite was on there. A lot of good stuff on there. Try Azure for free. Again, you can sign up for it. You punch in a little bit of credit card information and you get $100 free. And then register for the series events. Thank you for your time.